Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back in here on Cody and Gold, presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at kclind.com. We're about a half hour away from John Heyman, our radio.com MLB insider. We'll get back into the Astros cheating scandal across Major League Baseball and some of the rule changes going forward. His reaction, I'm guessing he was down there, as was a whole bunch of media, not just there to check out spring training and enjoy the Florida weather, but everybody wanted to know what the Astros would say today. So we'll get back into that in just a little bit. But it's time for our Chiefs Red Half Hour. We open up talking to some Chiefs here, specifically about the approach really going forward toward the month of April and therefore the draft and everything that will have to happen for, I think, the plan that Cody's going to throw out there for the Chiefs to be executable, really, for the most part, because we know Kansas City right now has a 32nd pick overall. Thank you very much. That sounds fantastic.
Just fine.
No doubt about that. So they have number 32. They haven't had a first-round pick in 2 years. Right? They've traded them. We all know that. And in fact, it was ESPN.com had the most bold offseason move for the Chiefs, just keeping number 32. Chris Jones, tag and trade, potentially long-term contract. They tag and wait till after the draft. Whatever happens there is going to have a key impact on the Chiefs' draft strategy, obviously. I don't expect Kansas City to, if they end up only with the one first-round pick, meaning that they don't trade Chris Jones before the draft. Because if they trade Chris Jones, I think we all agree that they're getting a first-round pick for Chris Jones. Maybe it's pick 28, maybe it's pick 19. I don't know, right? They would get a first-round pick for him. I firmly believe that. They necessarily could have two first-round picks by the time draft night happens. I'm not so sure, given where this team is right now with Mahomes still, even if he gets a new deal this offseason, the number that they will pay him in 2020 will not be outrageous yet. It'll be the year after where it's whatever, it's $40 million or whatever the amount is going to be. I still, as I said, this roster in 2019 was the best roster that Mahomes is going to have around him. That doesn't mean in 2020, though, that you have to all of a sudden get real stingy with it in terms of, I still think this, if you're going to get the multiple Super rings, a lot of them are going to have to happen over the next year to 3 years for Mahomes. And so if that's the case, how do you approach the draft? Are you a little bit more aggressive? You threw out even, you were serious about it. I thought you were joking. You were serious
no,
about
I'm dead serious.
You know, trading up and getting Judy and just saying, you know what, we're kind of going all in on the offensive route and continuing to be aggressive. But maybe there's another route they need to go. Terez Paylor mentioned it a little bit on the drive the other day about the Patriots model in terms of building up young, cheap contracts that you have for 4 years with multiple draft picks. And you're kind of leaning in that direction a little bit more. It sounds like I'm not against it entirely. I just don't know if they need to do that yet.
I think they do. And why is because they already have the roster they need in place. So by trading down, accumulating lower priced players, all you do is make your life way easier down the road because everyone is cheaper. And I know that you don't want to worry about money every single sense of it, and you still want first round picks, and the talent is still at the top end of these drafts and all the things that are come into it. But they're not looking for the top end talent. And I know that, like, you're saying, well, don't they want the most talented player? Yes, obviously. Juan Thornhill ended up being a more talented player than where he was selected. If they had redone that draft, he would go higher than he did. So they still have to find the value. They still have to get the picks right. But here's the thing. These players are going to become more expensive as time goes on. And they're set. Like, oh man, boy, if only they get the star quarterback, have that. Star wide receiver, have it. Star tight end, have it. Star safety, have it. Pass rusher, have it. Like, they have all of those pieces. The only one you would argue they don't have is a star cornerback. Every other position of major need for any organization, if they were just saying, what are we going to do on offense? Do we have our left and right tackle? Yes. Do we have our quarterback? Yes. Do we have a great wide receiver, a great tight end? Yes. Yes. Do we have all those positions? Yes. They're locked. They don't need to try to jump up necessarily. Like, to me, they don't need to stay at 32 to try to find the starting cornerback who's there. They can try to find that guy at 47. They can try to find that guy at 53, where they're going to get extra value out of those guys. They're going to be cheaper in the first 4 years of those deals. I know what comes with that fifth-year option means you get a fifth year. And right now, they would sure hell as love a fifth-year option on Chris Jones. And could have stayed in their pick.
Yep.
And taken Chris Jones and just stuck with what they had. Now, I get it. I understand that aspect of it, too. But I think they're officially in the spot now. If you're a team that has all those pieces in place, doing it the other way really doesn't make sense. Like, why would you keep trying to keep high-priced talent on your roster? Unless you're going to go big, like I said, Judy. They're going to go big and try to get talent. Staying at 32 doesn't make sense to me. Trade down. Maximize your opportunity. Put more players on the round, because on those guys who hit, great. You found the replacement. Have 8 picks rounds 2 through 7 rather than 5 picks round 1 through 7. Like, for me, I just feel like you're better off moving down and manipulating the system that way, because you already have all the star players you need. You don't need an elite talent at most of the important positions. You have it.
There's certainly needs, and, you know, no question, they have the most important positions locked up other than corner. And I think pick 32, for example, as we have seen over history of the National Football League, and certainly more recently with how the Patriots approached pick 32, there's a lot of value in that pick late, because there's guys that drop in the draft, and all of a sudden there's a team that maybe has the 38th pick, let's say, for example, and they want to trade back into the first round and get that fifth-year option because of the flexibility that can potentially
give
you
going forward.
So there's value to trade that pick, and certainly where the Chiefs have been the last 2 years where they haven't had the first-round pick, they went out and, of course, got Frank Clark this past year in exchange for it. Like, they're clearly not going to they're not going to be trading away picks. If anything, they're going to be stockpiling them. I think that's the approach to go, but it's not, I don't think heading into the draft, and so much is going to be dictated on Chris Jones, because if they end up trading him before the draft and they have 2 first round picks, then you can really start to wonder how you can approach it, where you can still trade out of the first round and still have that first round pick. If you only have, I'm with you, if they only have the 1 first round pick, it's 32, it's draft night, and they haven't traded, they're not trading Chris Jones on draft night, or they've decided, hey, we got a long-term deal done with him. If you only have pick 32 in the first round, I'm more willing to trade out of the first round then and hopefully add an additional third round pick. Let's say, for example, who knows what they would actually get for it, but let's say add an additional third round pick. And yes, because there's multiple voids, it's a deep draft at certain positions, wide receiver most notably. I think linebacker, to me, depending on how things go next week, wow, crazy, next week at the combine, for example, like I would love to do some more digging on the linebacker group, for example, because I think that's a major need for Kansas City going forward. If you think there's a, I don't want to say can't miss linebacker, you're not getting a can't miss guy at 32 necessarily, but if there's a linebacker that's available at 32 versus trading back to 32, if you don't feel like trading back to the third round, excuse me, if you don't feel like there's depth at the linebacker position, like, I think that is a serious need for Kansas City. Cornerback, yes, but I still think they're going to do either keep Breland or Fuller, one of them, or they're going to get to, and some of these other names we're going to get to in just a little bit, if you could pick in the cornerback market. So I'm not against it. I understand the thought process. It's worked very well for the Patriots. That's exactly what they've done. What you just said is exactly what the Patriots have done.
And when they needed
it,
they stayed there and took Sony Michel. When they decided they needed a position player that did it, they stayed there. They stayed and took their wide receiver. They stayed and took their running back. Okay, fine. And now they still have missed on some of those picks. Everything is always dependent on getting it right. Here's some of the guys they might have to replace. I'll list off some guys. You tell me whether they should, can, will, cut, or keep, or re-sign. I understand that not everybody's a free agent, so just to be clear.
Whether you want them on the roster next year or not, really,
yeah,
is what we're
pretty
going
much
at.
Is the answer. Your first answer is Sorensen.
Yeah, for Sorensen, for me, based on what we know about Juan Thornhill and the discussion we've had about his injury and wondering how effective he's going to be coming back from it, I know what type of year he had, but I do wonder in 2020, I don't want to say it's a wasted season for Thornhill, but I do have my concerns there. I think based on the contract and all, I think Sorensen, you should and will be on the roster in 2020, especially what you saw in the postseason. I expect him absolutely to be back, mainly because of
his
play and the Thornhill injury.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, and they like the way he plays versatile. Colquitt?
We went through the
number. Now, this is not really a draft issue here. No, you
no,
can save
it's
a
like
little.
$2 million or something like that.
He's 2.6.
One of the higher paid punters in the league. He's been right with the organization for a while. I think he's on the team unless he retires on his own. He decides to walk away, which I haven't seen any inclination of that. So, I think he's on the roster as well.
Bashaud Breland and Kendall Fuller would be next because those two go hand in hand. Because I don't think anybody's going to say you're going to keep either. I would think Keep Breland, let Fuller go.
If you're picking between the two, that's...
For me, that's the route I would go.
If you're picking between the two, I think it's also just more likely they would keep Breland over Kendall Fuller. I just think that's where things are trending between the two. Nobody's going to be stunned if both aren't gone. But if both are gone and you decide to move on from Chris Jones, if in fact that's the case, that gets you into the conversation, right? What corner are you going after in the market? That gets you into the conversations about the Chris Harris's, for example, and the Bradley Robies of the world. Like that's where it would have to end. It depends if those financial figures that have been floated out there, and I'm just judging it based, I continue to go back to the simulator that was out there from Bill Barnwell on ESPN, where I saw 4 years, $40 million for Bashaud Breland, excuse me. That's, you want to pay for, is that really the going raise? If he can get 4 years, $40 million on the open market, I don't see Kansas City giving him 4 years, $40 million. So if that's the case, then I think Fuller and Breland are both gone.
I mean, it depends on what they do in the free agent market, but both of those guys, but again, that I told you was the one position that they might need to pay, right? That's the one position they might need elite talent at that they don't have at another position. LDT, it's a guard. That's not an elite position. I could see him getting out of there. It's him and Cam Irving, and I don't think both are going to stick around. At this point, I think LDT probably keeps his gig. I think Irving might be the more expendable part just based on what they did last season and the contract figures too.
I think LDT, it's a lot of it's dictated on if they like somebody, as we've discussed about mid-round picks for linemen and guards, or the track record that Andy Reid has had. If they like someone they get in the draft, let's say they go ahead and they draft a guard, and I think they will draft a lineman at some point in the draft.
I would think so.
Pretty fair to say that. I think LDT is on the roster through camp and that kind of, and then maybe there's, if somebody surprises them that they draft and they think that individual is ready early on, maybe it's one of those surprise camp cuts or trades, I guess, at that point, like late in camp. That's where it's, I don't think there's anything you're going to see LDT gone before you would even get to camp. If anybody thinks he's being moved out of the organization, to me, it's one of those late surprises. It's not something that happens early on in the offseason.
I can
like
see
that.
It. I mean, they save enough money that they're at least going to have the conversation. Tano Passanio and Mike Pinnell, now you go to defensive linemen who don't make a ton of money, but have done it. I know Pinnell's a free agent, but somebody who has expressed interest in coming back, Passanio as well. So I think this is another one of those, to me, you just choose either or. Whoever you feel like has the better impact for you the following season, that's the guy you go with. And then you steer clear of the other, because that's where you feel like you got to get the talent somewhere else. You got to hope Breland speaks, step up. You got to hope that somebody else in the free agent pool or in the later round drafts is the same version of these two players.
Where I'm at with Pinnell is money always is going to be the caveat.
I'd keep Pinnell, by the way, to be clear.
Yes, I'd be fascinated to what that dollar amount's going to be. He proved himself. He's going, I mean, there will certainly be interest on the open market for him, and he'll have a nice pay bump from where he's been. My thing with Pinnell is the situation that you got Pinnell in is maybe why you don't sign him. What I'm getting at is, he was fantastic for this defense and was a crucial part of the run defense. We gave him plenty of credit for what he brought to this defense and certainly has done that. And it's great to see he wants to be in Kansas City. If the money works out, then by all means. But I think he's going to get more money than what Kansas City maybe would be willing to pay him elsewhere. And you got Pinnell in the middle of the season off the street. And he's about to go to Green Bay, and then they had some roster issues and he winds up in Kansas City. It's a great story. We credit Brett Veach for the talent evaluation and how they've made things work, not just with Pinnell, but other guys they've acquired midseason or willing to part ways with right before the start of the season. That gives me a little bit of confidence as well, that why I don't think you signed Pinnell, because I'm saying based on what I think he's going to get in the free agent market.
See, I don't like that theory of you can always do it again, because there is some logic to, oh, we'll find a guard
late, it's
fine.
How much you want to pay Pinnell, though? Like, how much
I don't think he's going to get, I think he's going to get like a 2-year deal. And so,
you got the most out of them.
But when were they their best? When Pinnell was on the field, he took care of a part of the defense that they weren't doing well, and they did a lot better when he was there than when he wasn't. And I don't want to just pretend like, yeah, he was like the savior of the defense, because a lot of guys got healthy. They started playing better in a lot of different areas. But he's one of those players like Passanio, I just feel like found a place. Pinnell made a difference. Those, to me, are very different things. Passanio found a place in the defense. You can find guys who find a place in the defense, like Tano Passanio. Maybe Breland Speaks is that guy next year, finds a place on the defensive line. Pinnell, to me, had an impact, a noticeable impact in one particular area of the field. That is the run defense. And I just don't want to ignore the fact I would be very inclined to bring him back. Let us know, 69306 of the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line. We mentioned Sorensen, Colquitt, Breland Fuller, LDT, Irving, Passanio, and Pinnell. Who are you willing to be with? Who are you willing to let go? The other guys on that list obviously come at wide receiver. And this is, again, where I feel like you trade down and make decisions based on a deep draft at wide receiver. Robinson and Watkins, both guys I don't at this point anticipate being back.
This is these are the easiest two on the list for me. It's really? No and no. It's just no like and no. No and no. Yeah, it's no and no. One, because I don't think Watkins, you're going to be able to get that number down low enough. And I understand his willingness to work with you a little bit. I just don't think you'll ever get to the money to where you really need to be. And for his own personal benefit, the money that he's able to get out on the market, he's not getting $20 million, but he absolutely can get more than what Kansas City.
You get four for 40.
Yeah, and you're obviously not doing that if you're Kansas City. So, and you can't. I don't think you can do that no matter what happens.
I think if you're going to get that money, why wouldn't you just give it to like Emmanuel Sanders?
Yeah, go out and get somebody.
I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
Like, why would you give that to, and that's nothing against Sammy Watkins, but why not give it to like a proven guy who likes being the backseat guy who just does everything right? Like your Edelman, your Emmanuel Sanders. And not that Watkins hasn't been that for them in the playoffs, but I just think I'd prefer it in the regular season.
I believe Robinson and Watkins are both gone. And Robinson especially. I think I've assumed all year that this will be a final year in Kansas City. And we've already seen multiple reports that the Giants and the Eagles are planning to pursue him as soon as free agency begins. I don't expect him to be in Kansas City. He's going to get paid nicely, and he deserves it. He's going to have a chance to be more of a feature guy in somebody else's passing attack, whether it's a number two wide receiver. Maybe I keep bringing up the Giants or the Jets or the Eagles, and we know the Eagles need major wide receiver help, and there's some familiarity there. I guess not necessarily with Doug Peterson directly, based on the year.
No, but with the system
as a whole, that would be there. And again, these are people in the text line mentioning some other guys. These are guys that either are free agents or that potentially you could, I don't want to say easily move on.
Well, Chris Jones is somebody that we should probably have a conversation about.
But we know they're not cutting him. It's either a trade, a tag, or a long-term deal with Chris Jones.
Yes, but then you still have to make the decision. Like I've already said, I didn't put him on this list because I've stated multiple times. If I were the Chiefs, I'd keep him. I know 913 saying, bye, Chris Jones. Like maybe the money gets too cost prohibitive. I do it because of how impactful he is. I understand why people land on the other side of it. The other question from the 785 from the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 69306, will Ward want more money? Maybe. But he doesn't have to get it this year. Yeah, I've already told you I'd pay Ward.
He had a tweet yesterday, too. Did you see that from Ward?
So he's going to be a number one
lineup. Top one corner. He said top one corner next season.
I would pay him now. And I wouldn't do the, like, tear up his end of his rookie deal part of it. But I would pay Ward now. I'd be like, look, here's some money coming down the road. Thanks, Ward, before he either shows out bigger. Because even if he just stays the same or comes back down a little bit, the one thing that will secure you in your comfort with it is that if you pay him now, you're going to pay him less. Pay him less means it's easier to get rid of him. He's more likely to take a team friendly, as in not, it's him friendly too, because it's guaranteed money in his pocket with a signing bonus, but yeah, I'd be all over Ward right now. But they don't even have to worry about that this year because he's obviously going to be back with the team next season.
Yes, and he's only slated to make, right now, $660,000. It'll be a restricted free agent in 2021.
Pay him. Yeah, I understand. I would just start paying him now a little bit more. Like, here's $1 million. And then jump up those numbers over
so
the next three
not,
seasons.
Who are you not willing to pay then? I feel like, because it's easy. I feel like people, even on the text line.
Oh, say keep them all? No. I'll tell you right now.
The text line people, I feel like, do you not want to keep this
guy? Fuller.
You can't keep everybody.
I wouldn't pay Fuller. I wouldn't pay either LDT or Irving. I might not pay both. I wouldn't pay Passanio. I wouldn't pay Robinson. I wouldn't pay Watkins. Those are the ones for me. They've given the choices. I'd keep Sorensen. I'd probably be fine with letting Cole Kmet go. But if they're thinking for $2 million this year, whatever, fine. I'm not going to get sweated. I think they need a second cornerback. I like the idea of doing Breland. If they're not going to address that in the free agent market, I'd be interested in paying someone. Might be a good tease for later. I'm interested in paying someone that money if it's not Breland, but they do need to pay a cornerback that kind of money. But yeah, I think there's plenty of guys. There's some, not dead weight, but there's some moves you can make. I think I'm like 50-50
LDT
on that
and
list.
Irving. So who are you? You're getting rid of two linemen in that scenario. Two offensive linemen.
I'm going to count on Rankin, who they gave up for, who's a former top 50 pick, who they got in the Carlos Hyde trade, who I'm going to assume they're going to get some value out of because they've gotten value out of Wiley.
He was nothing for the Texans.
Yeah, well, the Texans
I know Andy Reid gets the most out of his linemen.
He does, and as a guard position, they do a really good job figuring out a way to make those guys pass block. So for me, I just take the risk. I take the risk that they find a sixth-round pick who's a starter for them all year like LDT was, right, the year before. And I'd get cost prohibitive there because at least for now, I have a left and a right tackle.
Text line mentions, it says, don't pay Hitchens, need a better middle linebacker. Yeah, but you look at Hitchens' contract, Hitchens. You can't do it. You can't do it. 2020, by the way, the dead cap is $12.6 million.
He restructured, so there's actually no way to cut him. You actually might lose money.
The potential out
is... You save like $100,000 by cutting him this year. That's it.
The potential out is 2020, and it's $12.6 in dead cap, and then $8.4 in dead cap in 2021. Yeah, the way the contract is structured currently and everything, that's not happening. He's on this roster next year. He will be their middle linebacker. Now, I definitely agree. I think the draft is where they go, Cody. We mentioned free agent guys. We'll get to who we reasonably want to target. We'll get to that later on in the show. When it comes to free agency, I get the sense a lot of people are looking in that secondary. Based on what's out there middle linebacker-wise, I expect that's an area you're going to have to go to the draft to address.
Probably.
You're not paying a middle
and just
linebacker.
Deal with the situation you have there and hope that the defensive line holds up. And all of this is just going around to like who are the teams who can actually beat the Chiefs. Like, how much worse do they get if they cut half these guys and keep half these guys? And to me, not way worse. Not way worse in the competition, because I told you yesterday, I don't think they have a lot of competition in the AFC. I think it's just a couple of teams. And if you're saying competition in the NFC, when does that become a problem? In the Super Bowl? Okay. I actually worked up my list. I thought, I saw an Old Takes Exposed post from a not super big fan in Kansas City.
Kansas City's favorite.
Jason Lockenfora.
Uh-huh.
Who in May of last year, so about this time that we would be having this conversation now, tried to pick out his only five teams with a legit shot at winning the Super Bowl. Now, this is in May. I will give anyone a pass for in May. But his answers were the Patriots lost in the first round of the playoffs. The Saints lost in the second round of the playoffs. The Eagles didn't make the playoffs. Oh, yeah, didn't make the playoffs. The Seahawks lost in the second round of the playoffs. And the Chargers didn't make the playoffs.
At the time, that list was not bad.
Oh, No, man, the Chargers are so stupid. I don't know why people continuously...
No, but the rest of the four?
The rest of it's fine. But none of those teams got particularly close to winning the Super Bowl because none of them even made the championship game.
And the Eagles were a very popular pick. Like, I don't think it was a terrible
list
back
in May. So I thought only
in
fairness we'd make our list now of who we think are real competition for the Chiefs so that, including the Chiefs, who are the real super contenders now, so that we can see how dumb we are in February. Come that time that I'd say like November... Like, when we've really got an idea of who the five teams who were probably Super Bowl qualified teams are going to be, because then we can revisit it come playoffs and see how wrong we are. My list is short. Chiefs, because obviously they're the defending champions.
Shocking.
Seahawks, I still like Russell Wilson. I like the roster construction. I still think they're good. 49ers, because I don't think they're going to take the drop off. Teams typically do. I just think the roster is too good. Ravens, because I still think they'll be one of the best teams in the AFC. And for me, the surprise, Eagles. I actually think that's one of the better rosters in the NFL, and I assume health for Carson Wentz this year. Doug Peterson, a really good quarterback. I don't really trust some of the other AFC or NFC teams that are going to drop off. I didn't take the Patriots because, to hell with it, they haven't seemed like Super Bowl contenders for 2 years, and yet they won one and didn't win another. They haven't seemed good enough, so fine, I'm out on them, and I don't know that they have Brady. I didn't take the Saints because I don't know that they don't have Breeze, and they keep blowing it in the playoffs, too. I know those are two obvious answers, but to hell with them.
The Eagles... got decimated by injury. You're banking on the fact that they get healthy, and they also need some major wide receiver help for Carson Wentz. That's what you're banking on there. If they have that, then I could see it. My five, number one, of course, Kansas City. Number two, I also have the Baltimore Ravens. Great coach in Harbaugh. Lamar Jackson coming off an MVP season. They've got Peters and Earl Thomas locked up there.
But
they're going to have a first-place schedule, too. So things will be a little more challenging for the Ravens. I also have the 49ers at three. Tough, tough division that they find themselves in, but most of that roster is going to be intact, and I still think very highly of Kyle Shanahan, despite two major blunders in the Super Bowl as an OC and a head coach. Number four for me, I do have the Saints there. I'm sorry. How can I not have the Saints? I think, first of all, Drew
they're
Brees.
They're going to like start Taysom Hill and just
Drew
be
Brees,
a dumpster fire.
Starting quarterback, future star of the NFL, Taysom Hill. Drew Brees, I do believe, is going to be back. That roster is just too good for them not to be in the conversation yet again. They've had some brutal postseason exits, but they're always there, and you're going to give me a team that I know is going to be. They're going to be in the mix again, and as long as Drew Brees doesn't have the major fall off, I don't think he's there yet. I think he has one more year of being one of the best quarterbacks in football. I like the Saints there. And the number five, yes, I still have the Patriots there. I think Brady's staying in New England. That's what I'm banking on. And as long as Brady and Belichick are paired together, we're not saying that they're a threat to Kansas City by any means. Again, this is either five teams who have a chance to win the Super Bowl next season. If Brady and Belichick are paired together next season, still in an AFC East that while might be getting better with the
it's
Bills,
over.
The Jets might be a better team this year.
It's over.
Patriots still
Quit
have clicking. To be one of the teams.
You wanted to bury them all year. Bury them, Gold.
One of the teams.
They're over. It's over for them.
The dynasty's over, but when they're together to say that they don't have a chance to win the Super Bowl, one of the five best. You're telling me overall I can't go with the Eagles, what I saw this year.
I could name nine teams better than the Patriots. I know the Patriots had like the
I almost put the Steelers on this, Cody. I almost put the Steelers on that because I think the Steelers bounce back in a big way this next season. I love Mike Tomlin as a coach. I think their defense is going to be legit again.
Man, I saw Roethlisberger again last night at that.
He was at the West Virginia game. He looked like the Mountaineer guy. Whatever his name is.
Milk was a bad choice is all he looks like for that entire stretch. Kramer, quickly yours.
All right, I got Chiefs at 1, number 2, 49ers, 3 at Ravens.
Checks out.
4, Packers, 5, Cowboys.
Packers, Cowboys.
Watch out. Cowboys are going to do something this offseason.
Are you a Cowboys fan?
No.
I just felt like it was plausible.
No, I'm I'll let you know off air whose team I am. I mean, you should probably already know it's the Raiders.
I was like, why is this?
Oh, my goodness. What?
No faith in your own team, huh? You don't think Derek Carr is going to lead him to the glory?
Ryan, take over for Raiders.
I've seen him wear a Raiders hat before. Hey, man, let him live his life.
I gotta say,
live
Chiefs,
your truth,
Chiefs,
Kramer.
Chiefs is a hard two for me. Second team wise.
Raiders fan and the Chiefs are your number two team?
What? I guess. I don't actually have a two team. I work
that's
in
simulation
the market. Why
football
not?
Team. The Denver Renegades or whoever he's a kicker
Nightwings.
For. Nightwings.
Oh, simulated football league. All right, we'll read some of your texts on who you got for next year. Your bold prediction all the way in February. We'll fast forward to see how silly some of this looks. Plus, the one player you want in KC next year.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at kclend.com.
Back here on Cody and Gold, 15 minutes away from talking with John Heyman, our radio.com sports MLB insider. We'll get back into the Astros and the cheating scandal across baseball, their press conference today that went horribly wrong. Jim Crane, the owner of the Astros, saying, well, it really didn't impact anything.
You know what it honestly? Yeah. Oh, God, it's so bad. I went back and I listened to like Bregman's again. Like just his comment before.
In the clubhouse or the
statement?
His
statement. And I know that you don't have kids. But it is identical to when I make my 3.5-year-old apologize to the 1.5-year-old for like doing something she's not supposed to be. Like, Ruby, come in here. Come apologize. Ruby, come in here. Come say sorry to Desmond. And eventually she comes in there like her arms weigh. Like 1,000 pounds. Ugh. Comes in there and you're like, say sorry to Desmond. Sorry, Desmond. Like under her breath. Like, thank you. Was that so hard? Was that such a big deal? That's exactly how Bregman says he's sorry.
It would have been better off, honestly, they would have been better off today if they just did the clubhouse part, if Bregman and Altuve did not give a statement at the
absolutely
press conference. The way it went, if you weren't going to try to at least pretend you were being genuine about it and wasn't just reading off a scripted sheet of paper, then, yeah, you should have just gone the clubhouse route. And so we'll get into that some more with John Heyman. Also, the impact of MLB postseason rule changes maybe down the pipeline, and specifically some rule changes and the impact it has on the Royals here in 2020, but we continue talking some Chiefs, and we're kind of leaning into this a little bit when it comes to looking ahead to the future and guys we want to keep with the Chiefs organization in 2020 and beyond. And everybody has, I feel like every offseason, kind of your wish list of guys or gals, in other sports that you want in your respected offseason. So no matter what the sport you're talking about, whether we're talking about NBA, football, doesn't matter, where you want that particular player on your team next season. And Kansas City's in a unique spot just because of the cap restraints that they're under. What, number 8 you think it is? Top of I guess it would be the bottom of the league, the bottom 10 of the league in salary cap space. Number 8 available. And they're trying to figure out the Mahomes deal. They're trying to figure out the Chris Jones deal. It doesn't mean, though, that they can't spend some money in free agency. If they're going to part ways with some of the guys that I said that they maybe should part ways with, they will have a little bit of flexibility. And so for me, the obvious one, and I'll let you start it off there in a second with your guy, and it's someone that we've brought up a couple different times already. We saw him down on Radio Row, as a matter of fact, and that's going to be who you got that you're targeting if you're Kansas City. I like yours as well, but at the same time, I don't know how feasible that is because I think he's a different tier of player, the guy you're about to mention, than what Kansas City may be able to afford. And yes, it depends on what they do with Chris Jones. But for me, the target, if you're going to actually spend money in free agency, it is the secondary. It is going out and getting a corner. And there's some of the top corners in football, guys that they're not going to have any chance at for a variety of reasons. There's the James Bradberries and the Byron Jones, but Chris Harris is in the top tier. There's some other guys. Bradley Roby is in that next tier for me. Here's my only problem with it, because I view, if you're going to go with Bradley Roby, I'll admit, then you really should consider just sticking with Kendall Fuller at that point in time. That's the only knock on Bradley Roby. Roby is someone who was, a fourth-round pick of the Broncos a couple years ago, had a chance to sign a 3-year deal with the Steelers this past offseason, decided to go on a prove-it deal down with the Texans here in 2019, in the 2019 season. He was the sixth best slot corner in football, according to Pro Football Focus, as a matter of fact. I think he can help this team. The fact that he turned down a three-year deal a year ago for a prove-it deal, missed six games this year for a hamstring, I wonder what, if feasibility when it comes to financials, if that's more realistic for Kansas City to target somebody like him. He, I fully recognize, is not in that tier of some of those other guys we mentioned at the top. But I think if you're spending money in free agency, it has to be for a corner, if that's where you're going.
Yeah, spend it on Chris Harris Jr. That's who you spend it on. He's out here retweeting NFL Network things that suggest he should be on the team anyway. Yes, he's going to cost more money. Absolutely. All those things come into play, but I wouldn't do it. And by the way, just real quickly, Justin, Rob Manfred did announce an additional $1 million to go to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, a joint gift from MLB and the PA, to continue to go there and with the commemorative Negro League patch. We had planned on talking about that at noon. We will again, too, as I love having Bob Kendrick on because he's an amazing storyteller.
He was on this morning.
Yep. And if you missed it, go to 610 Sports KC. But like for me, just spend it. We've already said that if you can, anything you want to do in the cap, you can do. You want to pay Chris Jones, you can pay him. If you can pay Chris Jones $100 million, you can pay Chris Harris Jr. $50 million, $48 million, whatever the, you know, Bill Barnwell had it at four for 48 at about $12 million per year. So do whatever it is you feel like you need to do. And I think if, for me, if I'm targeting free agents, and we'd want to know yours, reasonable priced ones, 69306, Smitty's Garage, Burgers and Beers, not reasonably priced, just reasonable targets, actual reliable targets. And for me, the only answer to this is Chris Harris Jr. because he is your most your strongest area of need. He has the most elite potential in him as he's been one of the top flight cornerbacks for the past 5 years or so. And he comes at a price that will hurt because he's a free agent, but not that you can't afford. To me, that's what makes it all the easier to make that decision.
The problem with Chris, and I agree with you that Chris Harris, to me, should be one of the top targets if they're going to spend money at all in this offseason. Problem with him is he truly will be the number one free agent in that market because I mentioned Byron Jones and I mentioned James Bradberry. The problem is Bradberry is either getting franchise tagged or a big contract from Carolina. Like, they're going to pay him. Byron Jones is probably getting paid by the Cowboys. And those guys are 28 and 27. Chris Harris is 31 in June. So you've got a couple more years definitely of Chris Harris, but if it's a four-year deal, like maybe is what it's going to take, 4 years, 48, let's say, if that's the dollar amount and the length, depending on how it's structured, 4 years from now, he's 35 years old. Like where, you know, how many years of that are you getting out of him?
Well, and someone pointed out, like you know, Chris Harris is 31. Why are you investing?
Yeah.
Because, again, the window. This is the window. They have elite talent at every other position but that one. Just told you, and I, you know, I got asked by Randy on Twitter, why would you sign a 31-year-old corner? Because I think that typically windows of winning gold are 5 years. They might be 2 years into this. I'll take the next 3 years of Chris Harris Jr.
I wonder when I bring up Bradley Roby.
I'd pay Chris Jones first, but.
Well, sure. For sure. Kendall Fuller, though, he's 25. We talk about Bashaud Breeland. Now, I understand they play different, you know, different area. One's a slot corner, one's not. Like, Kendall Fuller at 25, what kind of money does he get on the market versus, and the reason why I bring up Roby, because Chris Harris, to me, it's not a pipe dream by any means. It's reasonable. It's reasonable to expect that possibly being an option. I still think, like, that there's going to be such a competitive market, that price might get out of hand for Chris Harris, despite him being 31, unless that scares off a couple teams. Roby's 28, Kendall Fuller's 25. How much better of a player are you getting,
I understand,
out of a Roby versus getting out of a Kendall Fuller? If you're not able to get Chris Harris, then at that point I lean a little bit more, just go ahead and holding on to Kendall Fuller. But because of the age, Fuller might be more expensive than Roby is, perhaps. I don't want to act like I'm an expert on what the market's going to be for Roby and Fuller as far as what those contracts are going to look like. What we can make an educated guess on is what? It's the 4 years, 40 for Breeland that's out there.
Yeah.
If Breeland's getting four for 40, tells you what maybe a Fuller or Bradley Roby could get out there.
There are options. Let us know. Smitty's Garage, Burger and Beer text line, 69306. Also, there were options today for how the Astros could have handled their press conference stuff. We're expected to be joined by John Heyman in just a few minutes to talk about that and the start to the Major League Baseball season. For a minute, go back to think about how much time the Astros had to get this right, Gold. How long they had to plan to figure out what it is they were going to say today. And then it still went like this. Who looks worse? Is it Bregman? Is it Crane? Is it Altuve?
Oh, it's Jim Crane. It's 100% Jim
Crane. Looks miserably bad. You were in Houston. Is he liked there?
Very well liked. No, he's very well liked.
Just curious.
I can tell you the viewpoint, because I've seen people responding to my tweets today, which have been very critical of the Astros organization and how they've handled this over the last couple months, but specifically today. And I can't say that it's not how people, if something like this ever was going on in your respected market, if that wouldn't be the view of the fan base. There's a lot of people there that are saying, well, what did you expect from the Astros? Like that's been the view of those down in Houston. When I say, what do you expect from the Astros in terms of how they handled it today? And I do agree on a small scale that no matter what the Astros said today, people would have issues with it for sure. I think we recognize how that kind of stuff goes, especially on social media. However, does it mean you could not have handled it better than you did today? And
you couldn't have handled it worse.
Jim Crane, for him to come out and say that, yeah, it did not matter. The cheating had no impact on the game. And for him to say that he's not holding himself accountable. You're the owner. He said, well, we fired the GM. We fired the manager. They were originally suspended. What else do you want me to do? And then he backs up his players. And then in the clubhouse, his players take some responsibility for it.
They did. They said it was everyone's fault. They said not just Beltran. Remember, they did go out of their way to not just let the people who were trying to be scapegoated in this entire thing scapegoated. And there were some reports around the league that there were some people, and we could probably assume Astros executives, they were trying to lay blame on Beltran so that they could dodge some of the trouble here.
Well, they were trying to find scapegoats.
And Beltran and Cora were that.
And Hinch is that as well. I mean, anybody that's no longer with the organization becomes a scapegoat. And that in its own right is not surprising. But it doesn't mean you can't take some responsibility for it. To just completely act as if what you did had no impact on the game. They're never going to come out and say, 2017 World Series... Yeah, we don't win that if we didn't cheat. Okay, that's just not happening. You can think that they wouldn't have won it. That's fine. Nobody really knows the answer to that, right? We don't know. I think we all agree that the Astros were a very talented team that year, no matter what. The roster was very impressive.
Now, of course.
Was there a major impact, though, from the cheating? Yes, we just don't know. Do they win the World Series or not? Nobody can say for sure, one way or the other. But to completely deny the fact that it didn't impact it, and it absolutely taints the 2017 title for the Astros organization, and it will forever. And these guys' careers, some that have been very, very good players already and potentially on the track to be Hall of Fame players, it's something that they will deal with, not just currently while they play for the next 10 plus years, some of these guys' careers, but it's something whenever the Hall of Fame discussion comes up, it absolutely will be brought up, and there will be people that will say no, because we don't know how much you cheated throughout your career. I don't, and I know people make the comparisons to the steroid era. It'll be very interesting to me whenever that question comes up years and years from now on Hall of Fame guys. How much do people correlate it and relate it, I guess, to the steroid era? How do they go just as hard on these guys for
they
this
should.
As they did with steroids?
They screwed that up anyway. By the way, Kramer is a wrestling fan, and that's the, like, he actually, like, I think, is in a wrestling class. But
really?
But that's what the Astros should have done. The Astros should have just walked in and said, yeah, we did it. Everyone was doing it. Because if they weren't going to give sincere apologies, the only other option was to just own it in the most comically massive way. Like, yeah, you know what? We did. What are you going to do about it? And instead, it was just one comedy of errors after another to start this press conference. I honestly can't imagine it going worse.
Let's go out to the 610 hotline right now, continuing talking about this. Our Radio.com Sports MLB insider John Heyman. Insider calls are brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Shots, now in two great tropical flavors. John, obviously we're talking about what went down today at that press conference. Just in general, what was your reaction to what you heard from Jim Crane, from Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, and some of the guys there in the clubhouse?
Yeah, I would agree with you that it went horribly wrong, but I could imagine it going worse. I mean, there's always the room for it to go even worse.
Okay.
Jim Crane obviously made the biggest mistake of all in his original statement, saying that our opinion is the games weren't impacted, and then he kind of walked that back a little bit, but it was pretty much too late. You can't, the least you could say, you had at least say, we'll never know. It's impossible to tell how much it impacted. It may have impacted a lot. It may have impacted a little. But to say that, in our opinion, it didn't impact and we're the champions and ha-ha, that was terrible. That was a terrible beginning. I've seen the players criticized for their short segments in front of everybody. I don't really blame them. I think it was scripted for them, and this is what they were told to do, and they did express remorse. They did talk in the clubhouse later. I think they did generally a decent job with that. They didn't want to talk specifics. I don't think we could be surprised about that. The one issue I had with the players is that, well, they expressed remorse, and they were sad for baseball, their organization, their fans, all that. They didn't express any remorse for costing their manager, E.J. Hinch, his job. I mean, these are guys making up to $30 million a year, and A.J. Hinch is suspended in limbo, and he was against it. I mean, he didn't do enough. Obviously, we know that. We understand why the punishment came as it did, but, I mean, geez, you got to feel sorry for A.J. Hinch if you're one of the players, and you got to feel bad about it. And none of them, I didn't hear one of them say anything about A.J. Hinch.
The more that keeps coming out about this, the more it sounds like it was, like you mentioned, very player-driven. I know that there are reports that the league didn't give them punishment based on the ability to just find out how this was going down. In retrospect, if that's how it went down, John, was that the right call to just let them off the hook just to find out how this was going down?
I guess that's debatable, but they wanted to make sure that they had it right and they had the story and they knew what the story was. And, I think union is very powerful, and it was going to be a tough fight on suspensions and punishment for the players anyway. I can see why they did it. In my personal belief, they were a little too light on the ownership. I can see why the players did not get punished. Obviously, their reputations have been harmed. I don't know if it's irreparably, but certainly badly. But that is what happened. They gave them immunity because they wanted to get the story right, and so they did get the story right. And the players spoke, and they still determined it was player-driven. So the players spoke. Honestly, as far as we know, the one question is about the buzzers that I still have, and I think other people will have too. Jose Altuve, when they asked him about it afterward, he should have said, "I didn't have a buzzer. There was no buzzer, and it's ridiculous, and that's an absurd notion." And blah blah. Instead, he leaned on the commissioner's findings, which they didn't find that there was anything with the buzzer. My understanding is that Mike Fiers was gone by 2019, certainly. Didn't say anything about buzzers, and certainly the other players didn't either. But to say, look at the MLB report, the report says there was no evidence, but that's not the same as I didn't do it.
Yes.
I did not do this.
John Heyman, our Radio.com Sports MLB insider, joining us here on Cody and Gold. So what do you feel is the lasting impact just for baseball as a whole, and still, the Red Sox, who were implicated in some form or fashion with this, and also the Mets moving on from Carlos Beltran? As we move further away from this, how do you see this going even the rest of this season?
Yeah, well, the Red Sox, we're going to find out by the end of this month. I don't know if there's a set date on it. I don't think it'll be this week, but in this month, and it's less egregious. Obviously, Ron Renicki has been given the manager job, so we know he was not involved, or at least the baseball didn't find any evidence that he was involved, and I happen to believe that. I don't think Dave Dombrowski was involved. It seems to be far less egregious. It'll be less. The Astro one is going to be cast a pall over their entire season. It's going to be quite a distraction. I think they hired the right manager, considering the situation they're in, and Dusty Baker, a guy who's beloved throughout baseball and is honest to a fault. And so I think they got the right guy there, but I just think it's going to be too difficult for them. I think they're not going to be able to perform very well at all compared to their abilities. And I still believe they have a very good team and a lot of ability. I don't doubt that. But I guess we'll never know how good they were in 2017.
Since we have you on, John, and it's the start of the spring training for the Royals here as well locally, just how do you see the AL Central playing out right now, and how far back are the Royals from contention, I guess, at this stage?
Yeah, this is not going to be their year. I think they're on the right track. I do believe in Dave Moore as one of the rare GMs to win a title and get to two World Series in a small market. So I do believe in him, and I think they have young pitching. And they've got some position players who showed some real promise last year, not just Soler, but others as well. Merrifield, obviously, guys well aware of, and Mondesi and others. So I think they've got promise for the future. This year, I think the White Sox are much improved. And, probably people will see them as third, but they're a contender, I think. The Twins are improved. And maybe the Indians took a small step back, not really a big one. They didn't trade Lindor. They didn't really have Kluber last year anyway. So I think they're still good. So, you know, I think there's going to be, now that the White Sox have taken a big enough step, and they've got some young players too, I think they're going to be three good teams in that division. It's going to be a better division overall. But I do think the Royals are on the right track, and certainly a lot closer to the Tigers, and I believe in them long term.
John, great to be talking baseball with you once again here on Cody and Gold. Thanks so much.
All right, good talking to you guys. See you later.
There you go. That's John Heyman, our Radio.com Sports MLB Insider. Insider calls brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Shots, now in two great tropical flavors. Interesting just at the end there. Yes, he thinks they're ahead of the Tigers.
Is there anyone behind the Tigers? They're bad.
Well, I know the Pacoda. I'm basing it just off of Pacoda.
Yeah, but let's
ago.
Go with the people. That's one computer simulation. Vegas, who actually put the lines on them, having like 10 games worse.
Yeah, the Royals are at 65 over under, and the Tigers are in the 50s.
The Tigers are very bad. I told you, we already laughed about Miguel Cabrera's contract. But just generally speaking, they are very far behind and have a lot of work to do. And that's just the problem with baseball in general, is that sometimes it's actually like, the way the rules are set up, it's still encouraged to tank. Unless they've got some plan for that, it's going to continue to happen. Like, even for Kansas City's sake, they are more likely to get around quickly if they can pick in the top five. Get Bobby Witt Jr. types. You know, get guys at the top of the draft. That's always going to make the quickest difference in baseball, although baseball is so hard. Because you draft some 18-year-old, and then you got to wait 4 years, maybe, to even get them on the field. So it's not the quickest solution either. College players and college pitchers, like you mentioned, they got a lot of really young pitching that will give them an opportunity. But so much of that is just going to be dependent on how many guys they're willing to get up this early and how many guys are going to be ready for the big leagues this soon.
Coming up next on Cody and Gold in the 12 o'clock hour, we'll get to what's trending and another chance at those I Was at the Parade t-shirts, thanks to Hy-Vee.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.